Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold on to your fucking hats.
Yeah, it's nuts.
It's coming. One, two. All right. We are rolling, Caitlin.
We're rolling.
We are rolling, and I don't mean a joint.
I rarely mean a joint. I can't smoke weed. It's
too potent for you?
You
do CBD oils?
I do CBD oils. It's so relaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't need to be in my own head.
We talk about that a lot on this podcast.
It's a theme.
It seems to be. It seems to be mostly you, though.
CBD? Well, yeah, it's because I am...
Are highly anxious?
Yeah, I'm an anxious person. Weed is not good for me. Cocktails, however, great.
Great for you.
Great for me.
Cocktails with CBD in it.
All the time. Why not?
I've not tried it. Should I try it?
Yeah, it's very relaxing. You might like it a lot. We had cocktails on the last podcast when we were doing our intro to your fantastic interview with Kamau Murray.
Yeah, where since having that interview, things have changed in his life.
Well, that's a really interesting place to start off for today because we're going to be talking a little bit about the off season, all the coaching changes that have happened, and then we're going to sort of spring forward and talk about 2019, which is sort of upon us. So yeah, let's get into it. Kamau Murray, coach of Sloane Stephens, they're on a break.
Yeah.
They're on a break? What does that mean?
Taking a break. I'll be 100% honest, unlike a lot of people in the world these days, and tell you that I really don't know, to be honest. I know that it was being discussed when I was with him, just about, you know, the potential and the future, but I haven't spoken to him since, so I honestly don't know where it's coming from, whether it's coming from her or from him, needing a break. But you know what? Sometimes it's a good thing as well. You know, they've been together for about 3 years on and off. Mm-hmm. Sloane, you know, Kamau will be the first to tell you that he's very intense on the court. Sloane can be at times difficult, should be probably the first one to admit that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, you know, you just need this break away and to either appreciate each other or realize that maybe you can do it without that person. Kamau certainly, you know, is I'm sure quite highly sought after coach.
Yeah.
Now from what he's done with Sloane. So listen, the one thing I can guarantee you in women's tennis is that if you've had a successful coaching job with one player,
yeah,
you are guaranteed a job for life. I mean, we've already had that discussion. I mean, unless, hey, listen, this will be a good test in a lot of ways to also recognize, is it a good test to see minority coaches and women coaches and how much they get kind of moved around, like white men coaches?
Yeah, right.
Or in general. I mean, we've seen the flip-flop of Wim Fassett and one to the other, to the other, to the other. And you know, the list is long of coaches.
Meaning, can people who are not white men transverse or sort of transcend working with just one player? Can they be as in demand as some of these guys have been? Your Michael Joyce's, your Wim Fassett's, that kind of thing. Is that the point you're making?
Yeah. I think in some respects, just the fact that, you know, how racist and how sexist can tennis players be as well? I mean,
sure.
that's I'm putting it out there.
I'm guessing pretty on both counts.
Well, yeah, no, I don't think they mean it. I don't think there's a conscious effort to wake up and be like, I don't want to hire a black coach because of X and Y, or I don't want to hire a woman coach because of X and Y. But they wake up going, oh, who's the male white guy that's available?
Mm-hmm.
Before they think about a female coach or a black coach.
Well, I think a lot of things in the world, and my experience is rooted in media, the way that yours is rooted in tennis, it comes down to access, right? If you don't see examples of success,
mm-hmm.
you only think that they look a certain way. If you And a lot of times that's because doors have been shut to certain people and doors have been opened for others. And so the nice thing about what's happened, and you guys in your interview with Kamau touched on this, is just the idea that being a woman coach, being a non-white coach, is now an example of success. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly thinking about the revolving door, because you just mentioned a bunch in a flurry there. So we got Wim Fassette, who Kerber declined to work with again this year, which is interesting because she won a Wimbledon with him this mm-hmm. year, and now he's working with Victoria Azarenka. I am pumped that Azarenka's got, you know, a credible coach with whom she's worked before, because I would love to see her make a run in 2019, and we'll get to that.
But can we ask the question of why this keeps happening?
Why does this keep happening? Yeah, what's going on?
I mean, listen, word on the street is that the demand for money gets quite obvious.
Yeah.
It gets brought up. That's what I'm hearing. I don't know the factual things with Angie per se, but I know that that's sort of out there.
Yeah. Well, it would explain why, if you've had a lot of success with a coach, you would not just stick with them, and maybe that's a factor.
Yeah, I think that you know, the price gets quite demanding from him, from what I've heard. But then again, I honestly don't know for sure. It's just sort of like rumors that I've heard. But right. But yeah, I mean,
well, that's not a factor for another one of your very good friends who we've had on the podcast, Darren Cahill.
Yeah,
he and Simona Halep, after a very successful time mm-hmm. working together, mm-hmm. so far as we know, and I don't think he would have any reason to be disingenuous about it, they just stopped working together because he's done for now. Is that the case?
Yeah, and I think, look, I know how he feels. Again, I haven't had a conversation with him about it, but I'm assuming that, you know, look, he's very busy with ESPN. I get that. He has other business interests that he's got going on. And, you know, with Simona, it's a full-time job. You know, when you're with a coach, when you're with a player as a coach, it is full-time. It is long hours. It is making sure they're okay. It is eating with them. It is often having breakfast with them or lunch and then training and then going to their fitness workouts. And I mean, if you're a really engaged coach, that's what it is. And, you know, with a lot of the top players, you are with them a ton of the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has, you know, teenage kids that he wants to spend more time with and seeing them perform.
Yeah.
You know, seeing them play tennis mm-hmm. and, you know, do what sports that they're doing, or just be around them a little bit more. And, you know, obviously with Vicky, his wife, and, you know, when you're on the road as much as that, he is already without even the coaching dynamic put in it, you know, I think that he probably just, you know, as he said, he needed more family time, and I get it. And look, he doesn't need it, the money. You know, I'm sure he's done very well. He does very well working for ESPN. So I would assume that, you know, again, it could be a situation, Caitlin, where it's a 6 month, 12 month thing and he just takes some time away
back.
And Simona, you know, if Simona feels like she really needs him back, I'm sure that he'd be willing to go back at any time. But you know,
well, let's talk a little bit about you. I mean, you are going to be working again with
Carolina
Pliskova.
Yeah.
You had a very, from what I would say, not only because you're my friend, but, you know, objectively, you guys had a very good run together when you took over full time in the middle of the summer, obviously leading to her making a semifinal appearance at, you know, Singapore at the tour finals.
Yeah.
What does the sort of next couple of months look like for you guys? How intense is it? I know you've got two bags. We're sitting here in your apartment. You've got two bags filled to the brim, coaching gear, broadcasting gear, you know, some casual clothes in there as well, because you're going to be on the road for about 8 weeks.
Fairly a lot of casual clothes. Listen, I'll be the first to say that I take quite a big wardrobe with me.
You're a bit of a clothes horse.
I am a bit of a clothes horse. I like to look good, but I also have, you know, 2 weeks worth of ESPN clothing with mm-hmm. me, which is a lot of dresses.
Yes.
And which is not something I wear on a daily basis. So I have all my casual gear, and then I have my tennis gear. So I'll be working with Kaya in Carolina Pliskova's, I call her Kaya, or her friends call her Kaya. It's not Kaya Kanepi, but anyway, but Kaya, I'll be working with her in Brisbane and leading up to the Aussie Open. And then I hand the reins over to Conchita Martinez, who will take over the coaching role with her at the Australian Open because of my time with ESPN and not trying to have conflict there, and, you know, putting my time and effort into doing my commentary work and working for ESPN. And then I'm going to the Middle East with her, Doha, Dubai, Indian Wells, and Miami. So again, because, you know, my work with ESPN, I don't really work for them until Wimbledon again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a bit of a conflict, and it's, you know, obviously an ongoing situation that we're trying to work around and work with. But, you know, all the players know that I love all the players. I love to interview them. I love to commentate tennis. But, you know, when I've always talked to all the players about their tennis. If they ever wanted to ask my opinion about something, I'm not shy in telling them how I feel.
Well, I've seen you casually talk tennis with Vika Azarenka when we were talking in Wimbledon. She walks up and you were asking her about her serve and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
and
just innately in me to be a nosy Nelly.
Well, you did it to me the first 5 minutes I was on the tennis court.
Well, you needed it.
It helped.
Yeah.
I hope I want some more of that. I've got a top 10 coach player.
We've got to work on that.
I know. And you got to deconstruct my forehand in 2019. Well, one of the things I think is so useful about you in particular as a coach is, and it helps me understand coaching generally, which is you can give somebody like Victoria Azarenka the keys to the kingdom in terms of you should be doing this on your serve. You should be doing this with your feet, whatever, even if you work with one of her rivals. But really, tennis is more about unlocking your individual potential, isn't it? I mean, yeah sure, you have matchups where you're going to say, now really attack that backhand, or she doesn't like patterns where you mix it up with a short ball. But for the most part, you know, anything you say to another player doesn't necessarily hurt Kaya's chances in any individual tournament. You're probably working with her more to try to be the best version of herself on any given day.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I see so much potential in so many players. Obviously, I don't want to go up to too many of them now because they are, you know, will be a rival of hers in big matches.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you have to implement that and you have to work on it. And players may listen to what I have to say and go and work on it or not. It's really up to them. Yeah, I mean, I've always just had a really open dialogue with all the players and everybody. And so I think that most of the players still would recognize and understand that I want the best for them.
Yeah.
I just may, you know, in the individual matchups, like when Kaya was playing Caroline Wozniacki, you know, first matchup in Singapore, it was hard. And she played, Sam Stosur in Beijing in the first round. You know, Sam's one of my really great old friends.
Yeah.
And so it's hard. It was hard to coach against people that I care about and, you know, I'm friends with. But, you know, my job is also to get Kaya over the line. So, and she's paying me for that. So.
Well, and you're doing a great job. One of the things I noticed in the second half of last year in particular was seeing her come in.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's very effective for her. And without giving too much away, like, is that one of the main tactics that you guys have worked on?
Oh, no. I mean, I'm happy to talk about giving it away. I mean, she's going to come into the net more. There's no question about it. I mean, I don't want to make her a net charger. She's not me chip and charge and come into the net. She has ground strokes. And I really didn't have that good a ground stroke. But, I mean, it wasn't bad. But you know, the bottom line is, you know, tennis is evolving into long, long rallies and long, arduous rallies with the likes of Kerbers and Halleps and Wozniacki. And you think about all the players that have won Grand Slams in the last 12 months. A lot of them are just road runners.
Yeah.
But they also recognize that they needed to improve their attacking game. Wozniacki definitely was hitting the ball harder in January of 2017. Bigger forehands, bigger serving. I mean, she was serving so well. I mean, I remember Kaya practicing with her in Singapore the year before, and she was out-serving Kaya. She was out-acing Kaya in the practice court.
And that's crazy.
Kaya turned around to me. She goes, you know, literally like, what the fuck? I'm getting served off the court by Wozniacki. And that's because she worked on her serve.
Yeah.
And I saw that translate into Australia. The irony was in the final, she played someone that played just like her.
Totally.
So she didn't necessarily, they kind of both reverted back to their old selves.
That
about
was
not missing.
That Australian Open final
was
between
insane.
Halep and Wozniacki was a counterpuncher's dream.
It was insane, but you know what? In the end, and the irony of it was, in the end, it was a backhand error into the net that won Wozniacki that match. It wasn't a winner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and often tennis is about making your opponent make an error.
Sure.
But when you're playing against someone who bloody doesn't make errors, it's like, hence the 3 hours and 20-minute final.
Yeah, you gotta.
But having said that, so for someone like Kaya, she's not going to play a 3.5-hour match and win it against a Halep or a Wozniacki. So how do you get a player with weapons?
How do you
shorten
points? How do you play to your strengths?
How do you make a player with weapons use the weapons and shorten the point and win the point against players like that? So you've got to have that.
Well, that reminds me of another player who's now without a coach, Venus Williams, who just announced that she wouldn't be working with David Witt, with whom she had worked for 11 years.
Yeah.
You know, Venus is my age. She's 38, going on 39.
You're that old.
I know. I don't look a day over 30, do I?
No. Well, now you've stopped smoking for 10 days.
Yeah. It's
the improvement
serum,
in the skin.
The
is
skin
like,
quality. Elasticity has been really rejuvenating.
It's real.
She's got to end points quickly. She's got to play. I mean, she's got tremendous weapons. She's always had a huge ground game. She's got a huge serve. She's got great hands. She can't play their counter-punching game either. What should she be doing looking into staying on the tour healthy? and effective in 2019.
It's interesting that, you know, her and David split, like you said, 11 years. And the loyalty was always there with Venus. You know, it's funny that, you know, Venus and Serena are really so loyal to the people around them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, we had the Sasha Bajan, he was gone with Serena. And then Patrick, you know, has been there since, really since her dad. So, you know, you see how loyal Venus and Serena are to the people around them. Mm-hmm. Because they have to trust the people around them because of, you know, look, they're huge superstars. So you need to have people to trust in your coaching circle as well, because, you know, you learn a lot about somebody.
I'm sure,
know?
Yeah.
So I'm sure that, you know, that's been tough for both David and Venus, because they're such good friends as well. So, you know.
Any indication who she's working
I don't,
with?
No, I don't. Yeah. I don't, but it'll be somebody that she needs to trust.
Yeah.
Because that's very important for Venus. So, yeah, I think, look, it's obvious that Venus wants to have another push, one more year or two more years in her career, and try and finish the career off the way she started. Last year was an incredible year.
Oh, my gosh.
This past year was tough.
Yeah. Year before this, she made two Grand Slam finals, right?
Two Grand Slams finals, a semi-final at the Australian Open. So she had a phenomenal year at the Slams.
Great year. 37 years old,
yeah,
2 years ago.
Whereas this past year, 2018, has been tough.
Yeah.
So I think she just needed a bit of a new voice maybe in her ear. We'll see what happens and who is on board come the Australian Open. I know she's going to an exhibition in the Middle East and then Auckland and then Australia. So she's, you know, 100% playing. Spent a bit of time with her over the last couple of weeks. Saw her in Miami and up here in New York, actually. And she's in good spirits and working. You know, her and Serena are both doing their businesses. So, you know, they're so busy. But, yeah, it's great to still have them around. But we'll see. We'll see what happens in the
we'll
new
see
year.
What happens. Okay, so now that we're sort of talking more generally about 2019, any other sort of like big storylines you're looking for? I think sometimes when you have a Grand Slam breakthrough, Naomi Osaka obviously winning her first this year, won Indian Wells and then won the US Open, so she had two huge peaks working with Sasha Bajan, as you noted, who's kind of made the rounds among a couple of top WTA
himself,
players,
yeah.
And then now has been obviously very successful with Naomi. What do you think in terms of her ability to sort of follow up the maiden Grand Slam with a solid year?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, listen, she's already proven herself a Grand Slam champion under the most incredibly duress calamity of moments at the US Open, but she played better than Serena on that day too.
Yeah,
I mean, she was a better player, and she's obviously proven herself by winning Indian Wells as well. She's had her ups and downs after that. I think she might be that type of player that has her ups and downs. Or if she can learn to sort of have a little bit more stability week in and week out, then there's no question she can be a future number one.
Yeah.
There's no question. It's just, you know, we saw her sort of collapse a little bit after the US Open. I mean, her speech against when she lost to Kaya actually in Tokyo was a bit of a shocker. Mm-hmm. It was about three words. So she has to learn to also deal with her popularity now.
Yeah. Right,
and
she's
also
a mega celebrity.
My God.
I mean, the amount of just endorsements alone she got
Major.
After the US Open. Yeah.
I mean, and being Japanese,
yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of pressure on her.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Nishikori understands that as well.
Totally.
So yeah, I mean, she just has to learn to deal with that. And she's very shy and very a unique character, let's put it that way.
I love her. She's so weird.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. So we'll see how she handles all of this now added expectation. And she's number five in the world now.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be a lot of pressure on her shoulders next year.
She's interesting because she, like, you know, unlike the sort of crop of counterpunchers who have won a lot of the Grand Slams.
She ain't no counterpuncher.
She's not a counterpuncher. She's not a Halep. She's not a Kerber. She's not a Sloan. She is a first strike, big ball tennis player. You know, similar.
Learning
to be smarter. Sabalenka, obviously, is somebody who I really admire for the same reasons, because she brings a pretty high octane level of, like, trying to close points out. So I'm going to be watching what she does. to understate it.
I don't know. If people haven't seen Sabalenka play that are out there listening to our podcast,
hold on to your fucking hats.
Yeah,
it's nuts.
It's coming.
It's coming.
The
Sabalenka like
tornado is coming.
One person who I kind of categorize similarly, who I would really love to see have a good 2019, is Madison Keys. Madison Keys has such great weapons.
Another coaching turnstile.
She has had a lot of different coaches. She's going to be now working with the coach of Tennis Sandgren. I forget his name, but she has had a lot of voices in that mix. Obviously, Lindsay Davenport has been really helpful. They have a lot of very similar sort of California roots. They have a similar game style. I know that they personally like each other quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But what Madison Keys? What does she need to do to sort of get herself back into that top echelon of player? Obviously, stay healthy, which has been an issue for her mm-hmm. whole career. What else?
Well, the coaching situation is a problem.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, listen, I'm going to be really honest. Like, you've got to have continuity.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to have a voice that you trust and that trusts you to be great. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important. And, you know, Lindsay's been in and out and is constantly in her communication.
Yeah.
As far as texting and, you know, staying in touch with her and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, listen, number one, health is hugely important. Obviously, she had her health problems even at the end of last year.
Yeah.
With having to pull out of Tenzin?
Elite
no,
trophy.
In Shenzhen. Yes, the elite trophy. Thank
WTA
you.
Elite
the
trophy.
The WTA elite trophy. She had to pull out of that when she was in the semis. And I think the important thing is having a coach with her week in and week out that trusts her abilities and gets the best out of her every single week. And she's shy, Madison. You know, she's kind of like got that... I don't know how much she believes in herself towards the very end of tournaments. And mm-hmm. I say that because I really like Madison as a person. I think she's a great kid. I just think she has to learn to believe in herself. She's mm-hmm. still so young.
Yeah, she...
Let's put it that way.
We forget she's still 23,
but
if 24.
If there's anyone that should be winning Grand Slams, it is 100% Madison Keys. I mean, her weapons are huge.
Yeah.
I mean, serve, ground strokes, massive.
Massive.
She can learn to come into the net a little bit more and finish off some points, whether it's drilling balls out of the air, taking
them out.
Or
playing some doubles,
There's no question. She's the next best player to not win a slam. There's no doubt about that. Her and I would put Kaya in that. In that position as well. What we saw Svitolina do at the end of last year, you definitely have to put her into that category now, just because she's won so many tournaments over mm-hmm. the last few years.
Totally.
She looks like she's put on a little bit of weight and she's
back
gained
to being muscular,
back that physical part of her game.
Yeah.
And what I saw in Singapore was impressive from Svitolina.
Oh, yeah. So, she mowed that last match.
Yeah, she mowed everybody.
She mowed everybody.
She didn't lose a match.
Yeah.
I mean, she was probably the one player going in there that was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
You know, she's probably the worst player coming in as far as form was concerned.
Totally.
And then she just smoked everybody.
Yeah,
so
match results would have indicated she would have lost.
No, it was unbelievable.
In the first round.
She was incredible. So, listen, and you know, when she gets to a final, she knows how to win. So I think those three players are the ones that might be knocking on her door for a slam three.
Now, we can talk about the women all day because I think we both know them and perhaps like them better, but we should, in fact, talk about the men because there were some
interesting... Well, you and I both like the ladies better.
I mean, it goes without saying. But for the record, I personally was really happy to see Zverev win the tour finals in London.
Me too.
We were at that tournament. We had a big party in London. It was great. I had some amazing Indian food. But Alexander Zverev finally got... Mm. He hasn't won a Grand Slam. He hasn't done a ton at majors. That's kind of the big dig on him. He's won and beaten the big four at three set tournaments at other premieres. Mm. And finally he won the ATP Tour Finals pretty convincingly. I was pumped.
Can we put down, which is what I said at the US Open when I found out the news of the Ivan Lendl?
Yeah, you think it's Lendl?
100%.
Okay.
And I knew when Zverev hired Lendl, I went, that's the greatest move ever.
Mm.
And, you know, because he has the ability, we already know that.
Sure.
You know, he's got number two in the world. Yeah. This guy's won multiple ATP 1000 events. He's beaten, as you said, everybody.
He's tough.
He's got everything. He's got the game. He's got everything. He's got the whole package, but he's young. And when I saw the hire of Ivan, I just thought that's just the little piece of the puzzle that needed to be put in there. You know, mm-hmm. Andy Murray needed Ivan to make him trust and believe that he could win a slam mm-hmm. and give him that steely look when he started acting like a twat on the court. I mean, he'll be the first to say,
sure,
you know,
yeah.
he's carrying on like a bloody idiot.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I say that with the most respect for Andy Murray.
Oh, no,
he's
know, you like love
literally
him, you
my,
love his mom.
He's my favorite tennis player possibly that has ever lived. Thoughtful guy, human being, off the court. He was just... You know, I'd be the first to admit, like myself, I was the same.
Yeah, he was
a twat on the court, right? I mean, just an idiot.
That's the title of
right?
this episode.
A twat on the court.
Twat on the court.
But he's also the greatest guy. So, you know, when he got Ivan sort of pulled him all the twatness in. And he just said, look, I don't want to, don't even look at me. Like, play fucking tennis, you know, and win the match and stop carrying on like an idiot, right? And, you know, again, I can appreciate that because I was the same way. And until I was able to pull in my head and control my outward bursts of negative energy,
yeah,
I was never going to win in a big tournament, you know. So he's passed that on to Andy. Great job, you know. And now he's sort of, that's what he's doing with Zverev, in the fact that he's probably made him believe mm-hmm. that he can win these big events against the big players, but also understand how to do it. And the reason how to do it is to, whatever it was, to add X and Y to his game and also to his thought process. And Ivan's a no bullshit guy.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about a no bullshit guy. He yeah. is a no bullshit guy. And I know Ivan really well. And I thought it was the best move ever. And that's why. And he will translate that into Grand Slam play now. For sure he will be tough to beat
so
in Australia.
My favorite young male player, and I think a lot of people have been sort of watching this crop. There's Tsitsipas, who I really like mm-hmm. because he's got that beautiful one-hit backhand. He's a bit of an artist on
and
there.
And you like saying Tsitsipas.
I love saying Tsitsipas. I'll let the rejoinder of that sentence go because there's a lot of different ways you could take it. I actually really love Team. I love Team.
Yeah.
Team is not universally beloved, but I love the fact that he's so... I mean, his game has such flair. He's got such, like... What he lacks in personality and the ability to string together a sentence that's that you can remember, he makes up for in the fact that he can play just, like, balls-out, nutso tennis. And I was a little surprised that he made a Grand Slam final before... Zverev did yeah. just because Zverev's a little bit more, you know, higher profile and has kind of been anointed a little bit longer.
Well, but Team's so good on clay.
Team is so good on clay. Maybe not the other surfaces, and maybe that's never going
to
be.
Yeah, well, he has to learn to get up on the court a little bit more.
Yeah, he's
I mean,
standing
so
20
far
feet behind the baseline.
Feet.
I know, it's nuts.
You know, and Rafa won Wimbledon by flattening out his forehand and you know, really utilizing that lefty sort of serve and mm-hmm. being more aggressive.
Yeah.
I mean, coming in and, you know, taking the ball earlier and all those things. And that's what Rafa did to win Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Wimbledon grass has certainly changed. It allows somebody to play a lot more defensively.
Yeah.
But to win, you still have to be aggressive.
Yeah.
And he did that. And so Team has to learn, you know, with those big old ground strokes, especially with that one-handed backhand, you
yeah.
know, to... You got to get up on the court a little bit more and be more aggressive from time to time. So will he translate that in other surfaces? I don't know. There's no doubt he's going to win a French Open in the next 3 or 4 years.
It seems like
as soon as Rafa quits.
Foregone conclusion.
I mean, Rafa's going to win like 13 French Opens.
Yes.
It's insane.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And then to round that out, we've got Borna Coric, who finished the year quite well, had a very impressive win over Federer in
yeah.
Asia. You know, I think that crop is sort of ready to... I mean, the reason we're not talking about Federer, we're not talking about Djokovic, we're not talking about Nadal, and we could, is just, you know, I think...
Because they've been talked about enough.
And, you know, what are we going to add? Like, unless one of these guys comes and takes it from him...
What about...
They're going to keep dominating.
What
no?
about the added little caveat of Andre Agassi working now with Grigor Dimitrov?
I love it. I love it.
I think it's great because... I don't know how much full-time stuff they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they're in Vegas. We've seen it all on Twitter and Instagram
mm-hmm.
and all that sort of stuff. And I think it's great because Grigor has to be told, I think, how good he can be. I think he knows that. But I think really belief in what he needs to do better
yeah.
and putting points together. And obviously Darren Cahill was around it a little bit. I mm-hmm. saw him in the background. So, you know, what's going on there?
Yeah.
I actually think that would be a great... I have no idea. I'm totally talking out of my ass, but wouldn't it be great to see Darren actually working with Grigor
yeah.
In that capacity to actually make him a little bit more efficient on the court? And I think that's been the biggest problem for Grigor. And I'll put it on the record, and I've said it before. You know, everyone talked about him being baby-fed.
Mm-hmm.
I went and watched them play at the Australian Open 3 years ago, and I wanted to know why the F Roger Federer was so much better than Grigor, considering how similar they play.
Same
right?
strokes.
Same strokes, very similar.
Yeah.
And it's a serve. I mean, yeah, okay, it's other things as well. I think Roger's backhand is much better than Grigor's now.
He plays those big points
but
better.
But it's a serve.
Oh.
Well, yeah, I mean, all the other stuff. I mean, Roger's just a little bit better at everything. But
yeah.
but it's the serve. His serve, I mean, I'll be straight up. It's crap, and it falls apart, and his
yeah.
second serve is shit. And one of the things that I noticed was that he doesn't get inside the court like Roger does.
Yeah.
And I was sitting on the baseline. I was like, oh, my God. He literally goes up and straight back down, perpendicular, up and down. He doesn't get into the court like
yeah.
Roger gets, way inside the court
right.
and then comes back.
Uh-huh.
So which is why Roger's got one of the best serves in the world because it's aggressive.
Yeah.
Whereas it's almost like Grigor wants to start the point and just get going and use his speed.
Oh, interesting.
And so if there's one area of critique on Grigor Dimitrov for me
yeah.
from my coaching perspective but also from a commentary is his serve. He needs to improve the aggressiveness and the reliability under pressure of his second serve, which is been a problem for him over the last couple of years.
Well, to contextualize it, I mean, we are choosing not to talk about the big four, leaving out kind of Andy Murray just because he's been recovering from an injury, but he's coming back this year. And, you know, obviously I think the tour is better with him in good form. Yeah. And skipping ahead to the next generation of your Zverevs and your teams and your Tsitsipas and Korch, because that lost generation in between has kind of... Bleh. And the reason that they've all sort of fallen apart is different for each of them, right? Like, Tsonga has all the... It's like, come on, I wanted Tsonga to win a slam. He had his chance back in, like, 2008.
Monfils, Tsonga, all those guys.
Nishikori. You know, Nishikori got real close. Yeah. Chilich broke through. He's kind of in that same age range, so good for Chilich for getting it done. But, you know, there's no... you know, certainly Dimitrov won the ATP Tour Finals, has been a consistent top 10 player, can win tournaments, but kind of falls apart in that last, like... mile. And so things like that you learn are huge differentiators if you don't have a, you know, a go-to gimme serve like Federer does, right?
I mean, you just have just watch his matches under pressure. I mean, that's where the problem lies. So I don't know if someone's going to look at that and dissect it, but I tell you what, if there was a coaching job that I would put my hand up for, it's definitely that one.
Really? Okay, last thing I want to ask you about going into
he's adorable too.
He's got
let's be honest,
he's got a beautiful
face. He doesn't, like, you know, obviously do it clearly for me.
No. He's an attractive man.
But I do love me some Grigor.
As does everybody. Everyone agrees that he's extremely good looking. I'm going to put you on the spot for the last thing that we're going to talk about. We're going down to Australia. We are talking about the men. We're talking about coaching. Let's talk about Nick Kyrgios. Nick Kyrgios is the most talented tennis player to walk on the court probably in a couple generations. I don't think that that's a crazy statement
to
make.
No, not at all.
When you see what he's capable of...
Not at all.
You are, like, blown away.
Oh, yeah.
He hasn't had a coach. Does he now have a coach? Am I missing something? I saw him...
Not that I know of.
...practice at Indian Wells by himself. He practiced doing 360 overheads, where he would have a friend feed him a ball, do a jump, and do, like, a 360 dump the way you... Dunk the way you would in basketball.
Or a dump.
And then he pulls out of the tournament a couple hours later because he's injured. He loves basketball. Mm-hmm. He loves children, actually. He loves giving back. He's an interesting, complicated dude. What the fuck?
I don't know. He's staying coachless in the new season, as far as I know. I mean, he had someone with him a little bit helping in Asia, but... Listen, the bottom line is that Nick is a character all upon himself. And until he starts to realize, you know, I just don't know if he... I don't even know how to put it in context. I think he's afraid in some respects of the fear of failure.
Yeah.
So if he hires a great coach and doesn't have the success, you know, everyone's going to be like, well, maybe it's just you.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, who knows? And certainly it's not a money thing. I mean, he's making shit tons of money.
I think it's the burden of...
I think it's a burden of that. I think it's a burden of someone telling him what to do. He doesn't really feel like he wants to hear somebody tell him what to do. I don't know. I really don't know. I haven't had a conversation with him. Look, I like Nick. I like Nick. I think he's shy, and I think he's done some really stupid things over the last couple of years. There's no question about that on the court. Off the court, he's done some tremendously great things. I mean, as you said, he loves kids. He puts his time into it. And
he doesn't do it in a showy way either.
He just does it.
You get the sense, and I saw him with a group of children at the City Open this summer in D.C. He's not doing it for the cameras.
No,
he is legitimately enjoying being on the
court. And I know there's some top players that do it just for the cameras.
You can tell. And I think...
Remain nameless.
He is somebody that you look and say, oh, he is having such a fun time with his kids. This is such a nice, freeing thing to watch somebody do.
He likes to have a good time.
And he's a different person.
He likes to have a good time.
Yeah.
He doesn't want stress and pressure. He likes to just have a good time.
Mm.
And I think when he's on the court sometimes, that's why he does the tweeners and the shit behind his back and the, you know, stuff that he doesn't have to do on the tennis court.
My favorite this year was the...
I mean, the tweener, like passing shots that he hits, like when he...
My favorite was the return in charge. So he runs into somebody's, in some cases, first serves.
I mean...
Blocks it back and then he's at the net.
It's
and
nice.
He did it against Medvedev, who basically looked like he was going to cry because he'd never seen anybody do it before. It was amazing. It was like better than the sneak attack by Roger, that saber thing that we were all kind of talking about for a couple years ago.
No,
this was even better.
It's
he was
insane.
Hitting winners off
I'm waiting for Andy Murray to retire and Nick use him as a coach.
Because
I think that could happen.
Good
that could,
happen.
That could
kind of
actually
thing.
Happen.
Yeah,
it might be a couple of years away, but with Andy. But that would be something that I could totally see him doing. But, you know, I don't know. Nick's an unknown quantity. He's incredible for the game.
Yeah. Oh, he's great for the game.
You know,
totally
if he could cut down on... If he could just cut down on some of the...
Bullshit?
Some of the bullshit... It would be great. And, you know, I do think, look, it's his career. It's his life. If he wants to hit a tweener.
Oh, I don't know about the tweeners.
And not hit a normal shot and people go, oh, what a joke.
No, I'm not.
It's his life.
I'm never mad about the trick shots. You know? I love the trick shots.
I don't. The only thing I don't like is the tanking.
Yeah.
I don't
like when he doesn't tanking. Try, that's when I
the
get
The tanking
upset. Yeah.
is a problem for me because, you know...
It's disrespectful to the sport. It's disrespectful to yourself. It's disrespectful to the crowd. It's
if you know, don't want to play, don't play.
If you don't want to play, don't play.
If you don't want to play, don't play.
I don't mind the
funny trick shots and all that. That's fine because that's his loss. But, you know, we'll see. Hey, he is like a box of chocolates.
What a way to end it. All right, 2018, you're in the books. 2019, we're coming for you.
Mm-hmm. We are coming for you.
You're going to get on a plane tomorrow. I won't see you for 6 weeks. No, longer.
Maybe longer.
Do you want to take a framed picture of my face just so you can...
I have this thing called a phone.
Okay.
And I have, unfortunately, way too many pictures of you on it.
Okay, well, I'm just making it.
But I am psyched for next year. There's no question about that. I'm totally psyched for next year. I'm ready to go work-wise and...
I'm ready for tennis to be back in my life and on television. I'm tired of watching these players.
There is no
vacation
question
photos.
You play more tennis than anybody I fucking know.
Is that true?
Except the pros, who have taken their 2 week sabbatical.
Yeah.
All of them went to the Maldives, it looks like. Uh-huh. I mean, Jesus Christ, every single one of them. You know, I was talking to our fashion consultant who has clearly gone on strike out of our podcast.
Yeah, I knew this would happen. She begged me to let her be on the podcast.
She's irresponsible.
Yeah.
But I was talking to Andrea Patkovic, and Andrea said to me, what the fuck? Every single tennis player goes to Maldives. Who wants to see another tennis player on a beach at the same time?
I mean...
And you're like, hey, good to see you here.
Right.
So, you know...
Yeah, can you imagine, like, Angie Kerber running into,
it's happened. It happens.
Carolina Pliskova at the breakfast buffet.
She went to the Seychelles.
Great.
I mean, she went into the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you know where they are, but they're bloody in the middle of nowhere.
They're in the middle of the Indian Ocean.
Yes. Like, there's like a speck, and there they are.
There they are.
So every tennis player wants to go to the beach.
Yeah.
None of them can ski.
Well, except our friend Andrea Pekovic, who has spent the fall with us in New York City.
She getting cultured. Do we want to do our predictions for the Australian Open?
You go first.
Oh, shit. All right. Well, I got to pick Djokovic in the men's because he's won the tournament, like, feels like 100 times. Uh-huh. He obviously is going into the new year with renewed confidence. I think Zverev will be a threat. There's no question about it. And then we'll see with the rest. I don't know. Roger, what's going on with him? He certainly didn't have the year that we expected this year.
No.
So I don't know. He might be done. But we've said that before.
We've said it many times. Women?
And the women's, I think Halep goes in as favourite. Obviously, we saw what she did there last year. I do think that, you know, the Sabalenkas and the Pliskovas and the Madison Keys, the ones that have been knocking on the door, I think they're still going to be knocking on the door. And we've had eight of the last 9 Grand Slams have been
first
won by
time winner.
8 different
it's
people.
Amazing.
It's
amazing. I love it.
Insane.
I'm super into it.
So, you know, obviously that's like
I love that.
Really exciting.
I love the variety.
Because, I mean, women's tennis, talk about deep. It's gotten to the point that it was about 15, 20 years ago when you had the Clijsters and Hennens and... Serena and Capriati's and Venus and Davenport and Moresmos.
I love that.
I mean, fuck, how good was that?
So good. That's why I'm so jazzed for these young dudes, because I want somebody else to challenge.
Tsitsipas and these guys.
Because
the men's has been boring.
Yeah, you know, I know what they look like.
I mean, it's
a trophy
boring.
Over their heads.
Yeah.
I don't watch tennis for excellence. I watch it for variety and surprise. And
I like to have excellent surprises.
Of course. Nobody undeserving
you don't want somebody shit winning.
Is going to raise a trophy over their head.
But, you know, you got Zabalenka. What's her year going to look like now with a lot more expectation on her shoulders? Because now she is not a surprise to anybody.
Yeah, people should prepare.
Hell
brace
yes.
Themselves.
Look out. Xena, the ninja warrior.
That's
what it is?
Warrior princess.
Warrior princess.
She's Australian. You should know that. Would like to see... Svitolina feels like she could make a breakthrough. I feel like Svitolina could win on the slower courts of Australia, so she's going to be my pick just to
it's
go
not
with...
not that slow. Well, here's the thing about Australia. You never know who's going to be fast or slow until you get down there.
Because the heat?
Because of the heat, and they do change it from time to time. Sometimes it's a little bit slower, sometimes it's a little bit faster. It depends on who they want to cater it to. You know, the last couple of years it's been catered to Roger pretty quick.
So it's quick.
So
you know who I would love to see win it? Who I'd love to see win it? I would love to see Delpo.
I love to see Delpo win anything.
You want to see him win anything. He obviously won Indian Wells, which was...
Didn't go last year.
Amazing. Didn't play last year because he was still recovering. And made, I think, what a lot of people thought was like sort of a surprise final.
Yeah, was he? Got to 3 in the world
at the US Open.
This is crazy.
Yeah, he's still in the top 5. So getting a Delpo slam Wouldn't that be cool? I'm just putting it out there because I want to see it. So.
Yeah, who doesn't want to see Delpo?
I want to see Delpo.
The Heat, I mean, he handles the Heat pretty well, so we'll see. Yeah, Delpo's definitely a threat. He's always a threat. Nobody wants to play that dude.
No.
No one wants to play him or Kyrgios or, you know, the danger guys.
The big,
that
the big
can just
guys.
Hit you off the court.
Yeah, exactly.
And serve you off the court. So, yeah. So, yeah, and the big question mark is how Serena going to be. The Australian Open's always been a really great hunting ground for her because it's super relaxed there,
mm-hmm.
and it's fun. The crowd love her in Australia.
Yeah.
She's won the tournament a billion times.
Yeah.
And I think the pressure is off her there because she doesn't feel... I mean, listen, Serena feels pressure every time she walks on the court.
Sure.
I can't imagine what that feels like because
yeah.
it must be stressful. But I think the crowd loves her down there. She gets into it. She doesn't have the pressure like she does at the US Open. The US Open's such... immense pressure for her, I mm-hmm. think, and it's also at the end of the year where she's just fucking tapping.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, when she's had her outbursts and her nut moments, and
yeah.
she'll admit there's been some crazy moments, it's always at the US Open.
Because it's the end of the year.
It's
and
end
she's
of the year,
and
she's
the
tapping, and the pressure.
Yeah,
and the Australian Open is fun, it's great.
Yeah.
She has, you know, great support down there.
All right, 2019.
Yeah.
Let's.
2019, here we come. Sun, here we come.
Gird your loins.
Leaving New York at the right time before the snow starts coming.
Leave me behind in the miserable New York winter.
Sorry, mate. You can always get on a plane.
All right. Well, FaceTime me.
There's the
every
flying
day.
Kangaroo down to Australia.
All right. Noted.
That's Qantas, if you didn't know.
I did.
Okay.
Okay. I'm on it.
Okay, mate.
Yeah, Qantas, please sponsor our podcast.
2019. Yeah, Qantas.
Come on.
Or Emirates.
Sure.
Or,
and we'll take any,
you know.
Yeah.
Starline. What is it?
Star Alliance.
Star Alliance. That's
yeah.
it.
Emirates or bust. All right,
really?
Until...
Okay, Emirates or bus. Yeah, they've got the best
2019
first class. Well, can we just fly first class?
Sure, of course.
Okay.
That's all I thought.
2019, here we come. Hey, Racket Magazine podcast people, thank you for the love.
Yes, thank you for spending the year with us.
Thank
this
you.
This is our debut year.
For the year, we've been engaged for a year.
Well, I'm going to leave that there. Goodbye.
Hey, considering the first pod we ever had was talking about my love life.
Oh, my God.
Let's not even get into
Until
that.
Until soon. Goodbye.
And that's it for this episode of the Racket Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Ruggieri, Taylor Dalton, and the team at Acast. Find us at racketmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.